Welcome to the Motoring Podcast, your weekly discussion of motoring news. This is episode 575. On Tuesday, the 23rd of April, 2024. Hello, I'm Alan.
Hello, I'm Andrew. And this week, we'll be discussing how one company seems to be cutting everything. In new car news, we talk about the tightrope of sharing body panels. And in points of interest, we thank one person for compiling a list worthy of inclusion. But first, we have one tiny bit of follow-up. And that is the news that in Wales, they will now be changing back some of the roads that they turned from 30 mile an hour to 20 mile an hour because they've realised they've perhaps been a little bit over-enthusiastic in the implementation.
I was going to say overzealous, yes.
I'm trying to be kind here because what I am noting is that politicians have seen they've made a mistake and are trying to fix it. Let's not dwell too much on if you hadn't rushed it through and thought about it a bit more, you wouldn't be in this position in the first place. Let's try and take the positives from this.
But then how would people have voted for them, Andrew? Move on. Right.
Some of the roads are going to be changed back. If you are in Wales and you feel one of your roads has been incorrectly classified as 20 mile an hour, you get in touch with your local council because it's the local councils who then apply and go through a process to get it changed back again. But good luck with your sat navs for a little while longer.
Yeah.
Basically, watch for what the road signs say.
I was driving around, I was driving around Cape Cod at the weekend and just randomized speed. They might as well be Welsh speed limits. They were just randomized, but in 5 mile an hour in increments just to make it really good fun.
Oh, God.
Don't even go there. Mm. Anyway, new news, but we're not at that part of the show yet, no. Are we? New news.
Yes.
Which isn't a great...
It shouldn't be.
It shouldn't be a great surprise. I was going to say, isn't a great surprise to some of us. UK government has decided that it's not going to reintroduce any form of electric car grant in order to boost EV sales. So any thoughts of a cut in VAT or anything like that, or contributions towards purchase prices, ain't going to happen, guys. They've said no. All of the benefits will still be there for company cars and fleet vehicles, just not for private buyers.
Yep.
Now, the SMMT, by the way, has tried incredibly hard to go the way and requested and pointed out a number of things regarding CO2 and approach to net zero, but as we all know, UK politicians can't really be swayed by that kind of argument these days. It looks like the price is the price for the time being.
Yeah, nothing's going to change in an election year. It's just not going to happen.
No.
Right, following Stellantis's bit of a week last week, another company has decided they wish to step up to the plate, and this time it is Tesla. Normally, we don't generally cover every news story about Tesla as long-term listeners will know, because we would just have a show about Tesla more often than not, and that's tedious.
And frankly, everybody else is covering it anyway, so yep. There. Anyway, this week particular.
Yeah, there are three big stories and implications for the company, so we will cover it. The first is that they are laying off more than 10% of the global staff as the sales figures are falling, and this is their reaction to such moves. Problem they found, though, is because globally they cross over into different areas which have different employment laws, such as Germany.
By the way, just so everybody's aware, having your employees turn up, have their passes scanned by security in the car park to find out if they're still employed or not, isn't the way it's done in Germany. There's a works council. There have to be discussions about whether or not the jobs can be retained elsewhere in the business. There is a significant path that you have to go through to make redundancies in Germany. It's why when German automakers are having issues and challenges, then the last place they cut jobs is Germany, because it's very, very difficult. There's a lot of things to do there. HR rules and stuff, Germany, very, very complex. Funnily enough, German unions, workers' council at the Berlin factory, not wonderfully happy by this.
No.
You were saying there was one other team which was being cut.
Well, yes. less than 12 months after being installed as the first ever marketing team, most of them have been included in this over 10% cut. So therefore, thereafter, Musk decided that they would partake of normal advertising and marketing like a grown-up company, and they're not probably going to be doing that now. But it's so difficult to find out real details because, if we remember, several years ago, they got rid of the PR team.
Yeah. It's improved. I mean, at least it's not as bad as the ex-PR team. For a while, whenever somebody sent an email to them, they received a poop emoji in response, and that was the automatic response.
Yes.
Good grown-up company there. Next up was the Cybertruck. Like it or love it. And I don't know how you could possibly do the latter, but there we go. To each their own. There's been an issue with the Cybertruck. In the top of the accelerator pedal has just been coming off with the high potential of getting stuck on various other pieces of trim. Now, if you jammed on the brakes or held down the brake pedal, it automatically cut drive to the drive thing. So you could stop it, put it in neutral, etc. But accelerator pedal covers coming off and jamming, not really very good for safety. So much so that even Tesla stopped and did a stop sale and a recall on it.
Very quickly.
Very, very quickly. The solution is a small hole at the bottom of the pedal and a pop rivet in it, which is... Visible pop rivets are always cool on any kind of standard or level of luxury vehicle. The reason it was going, it's a fix. So is duct tape, by the way. The reason it was caused is that there had supposedly been an unauthorized change to the production process in the factory. Because the metal cover was hard to slip over the plastic pedal underneath, and nothing wrong with having a plastic pedal underneath, the metal cover was hard to slip over. Then what people were doing was they were lubricating it slightly with a little bit of soap. The trouble was that the pedal was then glued on, the pedals and the pedal cover were then glued together, and the soap stopped the glue from actually gluing. So unauthorized changes to manufacturing processes, especially around safety-critical components, as someone who deals with process and stuff, not good, guys, not good.
No.
On the other hand, just to be fair, they did issue a stop sale, they did issue a recall, and they did do it very quickly and give some sort of fix, which is quite out of character, to be perfectly frank. This shows a certain amount of growing up, even if the fix is a wee bit cheap, but you can't see the accelerator pedal when you're driving.
Mm-hmm. But that's not all for Tesla, because they have to try and arrest the sales decline and further to the getting rid of quite a portion of their workforce, have decided that they will slash costs of their models across the globe, which will include the US, China, and Germany. Oh dear. And thereby reminding everyone who runs a fleet why they don't want to touch Teslas anymore, because you do not know what is going to happen day from day, and how are you supposed to build in any sort of knowledge for value?
Yeah, I see previous conversations about how badly stung Hertz has been by this, buying, agreeing to a price, and then Tesla cutting and cutting and cutting the price. So nobody has any idea what the fleet is actually worth.
No. They've knocked off various amounts of money. They've also reduced the price for the very much in inverted commas full self-driving assisted driving feature. And we must make it very clear that there is a driver assistance software, because it is even on Tesla's own website somewhere buried deep, but it is there.
Tiny letters. Yes. It's not full and it's not self.
Yeah. Everybody who paid $12,000 must be delighted that some people are now paying $8,000.
Or you can get a subscription.
Yes.
Well, you can add it to your thing every month, so you don't actually have to have that outlay. Again, people who paid $12,000 3 weeks ago, well, I mean, they're pretty foolish to do that in the first place, to be honest. But they are rightly, whether it works or not, rightly quite irritated by that kind of behavior by the company.
Yep.
One last thing is, on top of all of this good news, shareholders today, as we record, so it'll have been decided by the time it's out, will vote as to whether or not Elon Musk should get the $57 billion bonus. That's right, 52, 57, lots of money, but it's too much money bonus that was negotiated a couple of years ago when the sales price was going up.
Was that negotiated by, I want this, okay, yes, boss? Is that how it was negotiated?
Yes, Elon, of course you can. Yes. Well, that was creepy. Which was knocked down by a judge in a court in Delaware a few weeks ago. And now they're going back to shareholders. So you should really vote for this. The thing is, there are far fewer shareholders than there were before because they've all cashed out, as noted by the 50% cut in Tesla share value over the last couple of months.
Yeah, not very long.
Yeah, not very long. It's down at 140.6, I think, as we record. That's coming up too. We've added another story by a friend of the show, Ed Niedermeyer, author of Ludicrous, the Unvarnished Story of Tesla Motors. He says, plugging Ed's book, which is really good, by the way. Mm. Yeah, there's a little extra there on his thoughts on some of this kind of thing. Just pointing out, really, it is a very... They have accidentally ended up being a very serious automobile manufacturer, and maybe they should start behaving like it.
Yeah. There are increasing signs that there is trouble for Musk in Tesla.
There are.
Whether it amounts to anything, I don't know. Since we've started the show, we've routinely gone, well, that must be the end, mustn't it?
I know, they still limp on somehow, which I don't understand. It all depends how many sycophants are left.
Mm. But they are beginning to leave if you read that fourth article that we link in the show notes.
Even Ross Gerber of Gerber Kawasaki, who, quite frankly, had a championship winner for Private Eyes Order of the Brown Nose.
Yes. Yes, the exceptionalism and the mental gymnastics he has gone through.
And now it's just the worst thing ever.
To justify yeah. the share prices and why to buy them. And now he's he is one of the hurt.
Oh, very much so. Yeah, you say one thing that Mr. Musk doesn't like and he will cut you off incredibly quickly. Anyway, I think we've made it through the Tesla section.
Yes, we've got through that.
Oh, that's a relief.
Well, why don't you take us on to JLR?
Yeah, JLR has, as you said before the show, now that JLR can actually get hold of some parts, they can build cars and actually sell them, which is great. In the financial year for 2023-2024, which, because of the way UK financial years are, ended on the 31st of March, JLR sold 431,733 cars. That's 22% up on the previous 12-month period.
Excellent.
Also, at the same time, significantly reducing an order backlog that had got as high as 200,000 cars. In other words, potential sales that they just couldn't build yet.
Yeah, if we remember, not only did they have the parts problem, but then they had the, let's do two massive logistical projects at once and combine them together, and that wasn't going smoothly.
Yes, it was a bit of a cluster.
It was the computer system and their new centralized parts center.
Yes, it was a cluster, yes. I think is a word in the street. Just as a quick aside, it was really Defender and Range Rover Sport models that boosted all of this, which isn't a huge surprise because what's a Velar and the former Freelander LR2, whatever it is this week, is of. It's Discovery Sport. Discovery Sport. Which really, I couldn't even remember the names of them for a second there, so that gives you an idea.
No, but the Defender's stolen from the Discovery.
It's stolen from all of them apart from the Range Rover.
Yeah. Also, some good news for Jaguar. They're up as well. It's only 6.9%, but they are up. We are delighted to say something positive about Jaguar.
Interesting one, though. More than half of those sales were to retail customer sales rather than to fleets as well. So that in itself is a significant achievement right at the moment.
I'm going to stick with JLR. And the news that they have in working with an energy startup company, Ali Energy, have got a new product, which is a battery energy storage system where they are reusing the Range Rover and Range Rover Sport FEV batteries to create these static energy storage systems. Was it last week or the week before we were talking about the storage stuff and how that's going to be? Because it was Rimac Technologies, wasn't it?
I think it was last week.
Yeah, it's Rimac Technologies, and how this is actually quite an important bit that can help relieve stress on the national grid and energy consumption and peak times and stuff like that. Again, this is a good move by JLR. Here we are, two compliments in one show. What's wrong with us? But this is a good move by JLR because this diversifies what they're doing, which is always a good thing.
Yeah.
But I think is really going to help us as we move into a much more electrified future. As we said last week or the week before, for areas that don't get good quality and high enough energy density supply, this will help those outlying regions be able to deal with fluctuations much more evenly.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, and will doubtless be more of this. There's lots of sort of driving of prototypes stories have just hit the interwebs and probably newsstands as well about the new electric Range Rover. Yes, yet another electric SUV, everyone.
Did anyone ask if it's on the Chery platform or not?
No, I don't think anybody's...
The alleged Chery platform. I don't think. It was alleged by the executive from Chery.
I don't know that you get invited to many international launches once you've asked that question.
Okay, fair enough. Talking of international, do you want to take us to the US?
I've talked a little bit about this, I suppose. Volkswagen workers have voted to unionize in the US at the plant in Chattanooga. The workers there voted to join the United Auto Workers Union on Friday night, which is a big deal. UAW, they negotiated one heck of a pay deal, etc., with the traditionally American manufacturers, I think is a reasonable way to put it.
Yeah.
They're all based up around Michigan. Obviously, Chrysler, Ford, and GM. One of the reasons why many outside and foreign companies, whenever they've been building manufacturing plants in America, decided to build them in the South was not just the fine aid that they got for building manufacturing plants in areas with traditionally low unemployment over a long, long period of time, but also because there were no unions down there at all. As a result, it follows on from the American Civil War, and of course, slaves weren't allowed to unionize, so unions were quite deterred in the South, as I'm sure you can imagine. This is a big deal. I mean, I've already talked a little bit about unions in Germany and the way that you can't just hire and fire the way that you can in America. So this will be a significant challenge to Volkswagen. It shouldn't be a big challenge to Volkswagen. They should be used to these kind of things.
But it was interesting. You talk about how, in the previous story, an American company not handling the German situation well.
Mm.
In this instance, the American union used the German company's own rules where it was in there that said they could form a union. It's in the whole main group's rules. So therefore they went, well, you've got to let us do this. You've got to let us at least ask the question, because they were, VW were trying not to let them do that.
Well, that's a traditionally American approach, as we've seen even within automotive journalism over the last few years. However, the thing is, the worry for many of the car makers in America is one of the reasons that making cars here is relatively cheap is because you can slap the labor down. It's fine. Everyone can go off and just get a second job and they can wait tables in the evenings. Honda, Mercedes, Benz, BMW, Toyota, Volvo, Mazda, anyone who's not a traditional American car manufacturer who manufactures in the US should start being a little bit worried about that. Lucid, Tesla, and Rivian, of course, they have factories in the South. Tesla's building a factory in Texas, a battery factory in Texas. They've got California ones, and they're well known for union busting, although they say no. This is a worry, especially for some of these EV manufacturers who are pretty much on the wire. It's not an easy, happy cash flow situation. This is a worry, and any decent union knows that it has to toe a line between not bankrupting the employer and then having loads of unemployed people, and also getting a good deal for the workers there. Americans not happy. I mean, I've just scrolled the lower half of the internet, and even on the Autopian, where the comments are normally pretty good, then there's some people declaring that unions are theft. And don't get me there.
Ingrained dogma.
It is very much.
Anyway, I will stick with Volkswagen, but I am going to go back to Germany this time. And Volkswagen is going to court to protect the use of the ID name following the fact that they have a supplier called Identitech in Germany, who also, and for many, many years previous to Volkswagen used the name ID dot and then whatever the thing is after it.
Yes.
And there is a list in the show notes to the Electrive article that will show you those sort of things.
They are a former supplier to Volkswagen.
Yes. Yes, well, yeah, obviously they are now because they've fallen out because they have, since the introduction of the ID, they have been trying to settle this out of court with Volkswagen, but have now got to the point where they're not getting anywhere and have taken them to a Hamburg court.
Mm.
And I think, no expert, but it does look pretty suspicious. And in the ungood category for Volkswagen here, because it, when you open the show notes, you will see it is exactly the same way that Volkswagen has gone around the ID3, the ID Buzz, the ID Wall Charger or whatever.
I think the ID dot and the numbers probably wasn't quite so bad, but whenever you got onto the buzz and the words, then that's when it starts to get a little bit tricky. Trademark law is tough and complicated, and it depends in which sectors Identitech registered the trademarks and that kind of thing, and if it can be seen and shown to cause confusion amongst potential customers. So it gets very difficult and murky after this.
Well, in 2019, VW filed an opposition against Identitech's brands with the Patent and Trademark Office. And then following subsequent discussions, they admitted they had made a mistake because, and I'm quoting here, the Identitech brands were older than those of Volkswagen.
Exactly. Big companies, by the way, bullying smaller companies with trademarks, not an unusual thing at all. I did some work at the Intellectual Property Organization in Newport, South Wales. There's a lovely part of the world to spend a few months. And it was quite shocking, actually, how trademark and copyright law works on these things. So I would never register a trademark. Anyway, that takes us hopping, skipping, and jumping to Guilt Minute, the quick break in the show where we ask for a tad of financial support to keep the lights on, the hosting running. If you feel the Motoring Podcast worth small consideration every month, then you can become a patron. Different levels of patron include different levels of commitment from us to you, including being able to watch the show recorded live. We also have a small range of merchandise in our Spring store, from stickers to mugs and t-shirts. If you don't have any spare cash, and we do completely understand, then you can help us by following for free from a podcast player to receive every show as they're released, and by liking and rating the show in whatever way your podcast supplier lets you. If you've done all of that, and some of you do, so thank you very much indeed, then the last thing you can do is to recommend us to your friends or colleagues.
Yes, thank you everyone that does. Just a quick reminder, I'm going to be very brief on this one. If you are an Android operating system user, please do tell us what podcast app you use to listen to the show. I've got quite a lot of nods for Pocket Casts, but they're not the only ones. So please do remind us because Google Podcasts is going and we want to help everyone be able to carry on as normal, but with a new app.
Yes, make it a lovely smooth transition.
Yep. Anyway, new car news, Alan. Do you want to take us to Citroen?
Yes. Citroen have unveiled the new Citroen C3 Aircross, and it's a small SUV.
But it's got Citroen's face.
Yes, it has a modern Citroen-y face, which makes it sound like a lemon.
Which I don't mind at all, actually. I think it's quite a good, nice, distinct look.
Yes, it is a very Citroen-y look. I will say I quite like on this the C pillar and then the way that the spoiler comes out. It reminds me of the AMI 6, the AMI 4 saloons with the reverse raked rear window. You kind of squint at it, I was just looking at this picture of the rear three quarters that's on my screen because Andrew and I have been discussing these things before the show. And I quite like it. The front is a little bit Ollie like. The relatively recent concept car. And there's hints of other previous models if you stand back and squint. And if you don't stand back and squint, it's perfectly good looking little car.
I think the green is good. Mm. I also, for as much as we mocked Kia last week on them stretching the explanation of design features, I think that Citroen are quite right to say it looks tough, muscular and robust. Which is not something that we could have said 20 years ago about Citroens when they went through their blancmange phase. But this, I really like the look of this. And what I really do appreciate as somebody with a family is it's a squared off SUV. It's squared off at the back.
Yeah, it's
so they are maximizing the footprint.
Yes. It's a little bit bigger than the last one. It's 20 centimeters longer, which in car terms is actually quite a lot.
Hmm.
But that also means that it can now be a 7-seater.
Really wouldn't want to get in the back of that.
I think it would be, you know, legs optional in the rearmost row, to be perfectly honest. They'll also be introducing electric powertrains. So yes, yet another electric SUV, as well as petrol and mild hybrid choices.
Mm-hmm.
The platform it's all based on is called the Smart Car platform, by the way, which I can't see how that could possibly ever cause any confusion anywhere.
I thought this was, because it's Stellantis, right?
Yeah.
Wasn't there the medium and then the large?
I don't know. Top Gear is referring to it as the Smart Car platform. And then in the next story, we find that it, the same reference is made by a different publication.
Okay, so that must have been I know when it came out, we discussed it on the show, and I know there was something in particular we did point out, but I haven't had a chance to go back and check the show when we did, but that would make sense for us because the second platform is called Medium or something. So it's like they went Smart Car, Medium, and then Large. It was like they didn't follow it through at all. But anyway, talking of the next one, let's talk about the Frontera from Vauxhall or the... yes. Okay, let's get into this now. Same platform. Astonishingly similar looks in certain areas of the car as well.
The C-pillar is familiar.
I think identical is the word you're looking for. And so is the rear spoiler.
And so is the rear spoiler. This one's shown in the pictures in a different two-tone colorway, so what I've just said is less obvious. If the Citroën C3 Aircross is too interesting for you, then you might wish to consider the Vauxhall Frontera.
Yes. The lights are different. It does have Vauxhall's front on it, which isn't a bad thing. I don't mind that lights into the black grille.
I think it's really good.
The front. I think it's quite a
nice. I like it.
Yeah. And what I will say about both of them is it's a very clean look, which I am very much in favour of. They have not gone for the slashes and dents and everything. There are some, you can see some crease lines here and there, but it has not been beaten. It doesn't look like it's been beaten with a stick as it came out of the factory.
No, absolutely not.
It's a Vauxhall, so it's going to do well, particularly at this size, being around 4.4 metres long. So it's up against the Dacia Duster and the Qashqai.
Amazingly, it's exactly the same length as the C3 Aircross.
Is it? That's a shock.
I know. What kind of coincidence could that possibly be?
But this does bring up a point that Stellantis are going to have to be careful about, is because remember the bad old days when there was rebadging that went
literally,
on?
Literally, yeah.
And it was just swapping a badge.
Hmm.
It's obviously to keep costs down. They are sharing as many parts and panels and pieces as possible. But that's business 101. We know that. We know that's what the car industry does that.
It's mostly very subtle. It is mostly very well done, but the C-pillar is just so, and the glass, the rear glass, is so obviously the same.
If you allow the freedom to your respective brands to make the rest look distinct enough, I think you can get away with it. Like here, I think there is enough difference to get away with it.
Absolutely.
Because the front ends are very different. The back ends around the lights sort of thing, they are very different. And the interesting thing is going to be, is they are obviously targeting the same markets or the same customer.
Mm.
And it'll be interesting to see who wins out because there will be slight price differences. There always are with the Stellantis cars.
And spec differences as a result.
Yeah.
So this
is going to be I am fascinated to watch because Stellantis is known, thanks to their CEO, as the slasher of costs.
Hmm.
So how do you keep the brands distinctive? Because don't forget, we were discussing Alfa Romeo last week.
Yeah.
That's a bigger jump, I think, than going between more consumer brands, as in Vauxhall and Citroën, going up to Alfa.
This week, of course, that story has been in my mind. Whenever I've seen a Dodge thing, Hornet. I knew it wasn't.
Was it
Dart.
From a 1940s comic book?
No. So the Dodge Hornet or one of the others, which I now can't think of. I've been thinking about that, the ones that share the same, the same platform. I was wondering about that because I thought, how on earth is that thing going to be the same? And I sat in the Hornet and I tell you, they're better. the interior of the Alfa better be better. But yeah, by the way, if anybody's complaining about the use of the Frontera name, I quite like them. Second generation Frontera is really good. First one, bit rubbish, bit too commercial still.
I don't think you can complain that one because it was an SUV.
It was, exactly. But it's a much better name than Crossland.
Yeah.
Way better than Grandland, which is only a little bit bigger nowadays. I really hope they dump Grandland because that's a...
No, you've got bad news for next week then.
It's just an awful name.
But we'll cover that next week.
Oh, God.
Take us to Mazda anyway.
Mazda have released a new flagship for the European market, and it's the Mazda CX-80. It is a 7-seat SUV, which remarkably is not electric. They're marketing it as a rival for the Volvo XC90, so obviously it'll be up against things like the Kia Sorento we talked about last week, and other vehicles like that. They're showing it in the press photos as showing as pulling a horse box at one point, so we can get an idea of where they're sort of pitching with that. There will be a mild hybrid 3.3-litre straight-six diesel engine producing 250 horsepower, 0 to 62 miles an hour of 8.4 seconds, top speed 136. There's a plug-in hybrid with a 2.5-litre four-cylinder petrol engine with a 17.8-kilowatt-hour battery and electric motor, which produces 323 horsepower and 369 pound-feet. And then it wants me to do some maths by cutting 1.6 seconds to 0 to 62 over the diesel, so that makes it 6.8 seconds. In theory, it can do electric only range of 32 miles and eliminates and emits 36 grams per kilogram CO2, putting it in a 12% benefit in kind tax bracket, which is pretty good. Both engines, 8-speed auto gearbox to both axles, but the bias is rear-wheel drive,
okay,
like an X5. It's an interesting choice. There's definitely a market for this kind of vehicle. Mazda seems like a strange choice to be in that market, but they've chosen to do it, and it's good looking. It's reasonably priced. It's as good looking.
Stretching good looking
for a three. Sorry, let me clarify that. For a three-row SUV, it is relatively good looking. It does look like a Mazda 6 really should be going on a Mazda 6 estate really should be going on a diet. Okay, it is not as traditionally good looking as the rest of the range. And in fact, if I back up a little bit, it is a bit blobby in places.
Yeah,
they've tried.
It's very difficult, obviously, with a large SUV. But this is, if you like Mazda for their aesthetics, this is the weakest model that they offer, I would suggest.
These comments are based on heavily retouched press photos. There is another model sold over here, which is very, very similar, and it's called the CX-90. I am not really sure I can tell the difference between the two of them unless they were sitting side by side. But the CX-90, when you see it out on the road, is really very good looking for that size of SUV. In fact, just generally is really quite good looking. It looks much, much better than these CX-80 picks.
I will say with the CX-80, it is refreshing to see that they have not tried to cram the wheel arches with oversized wheels.
Yes, that's one of the reasons.
They look like real tyres that you would use in real life.
Yes. Price is expected to start at £50,000. Top range Humura Plus cars will cost around £56,000. All models come with tri-zone air conditioning, a 12.3-inch infotainment screen, wireless smartphone mirroring, and Amazon Alexa voice control as standard. Plus memory function that uses facial recognition to restore settings for a particular driver.
Why expose yourself to that risk
as a company?
I mean, we've said it before.
Yeah. Move on. I'd said that just to wind you up because it is true, but it also winds Andrew up. So it's worth saying just for the look on his face.
Mm-hmm. Right. I'm going to take us to the London Electric Vehicle Company, or LEVC, because they have revealed their first car that will go on sale in the UK. Now, this is an MPV that is capable of seating between 6 and 8 adults, depending on the configuration. Think along the lines of luxury MPV. That's what they're aiming at. That's the market they're going for. It's a large van with seats in it.
They look very comfortable seats in all the press photos.
It does look like it would be a lovely place to sit, particularly as it's going to be... Is it fully electric?
Yes.
Yes, fully electric, of course. It will be comfortable to sit in and it will be quiet to sit in.
When it will basically be a Volvo minivan, Volvo MPV.
Yes.
I strongly suspect it is basically the same as the Volvo that is definitely being sold in China. I don't know where else it's going to be sold, which has a more interesting, hang on, A, B, C pillar. It's got a little fin on the C pillar, like a DS, Citroen DS thing has, and a Volvo grill, but this does without either of those, so that it's a little bit more van-y. Be interesting to see if it makes inroads into the luxury airport transfer market.
Yeah.
I'm sure that there'll be some people, some companies will buy them far more with the 8-seater capacity than otherwise. Now, I wouldn't be surprised if there was a larger van version, because it's bigger than the London taxi-based one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, do you want to take us to Audi now?
Okay.
Just quickly.
There's a new Audi S3.
Before you pull a face.
There's a new Audi S3. It's like every other Audi S3. It costs £46,925. It gets powertrain tweaks, design update, really, and a torque-splitting rear axle. The photos shown is in saloon, and the saloon A3 is the best looking Audi. Although you can't, it's the best looking Audi,
most aesthetically pleasing proportion wise.
It's relative. And it's also available as a sportback, which I assume means hatchback.
Yes.
To those of us who don't speak Audi, 23 horsepower more, 15 pound feet more. 2 liter turbocharged 4-cylinder engine. It's got lights. It's got fancy dashboards. I don't really care.
Inside's been tweaked about.
Sorry. Oh yeah, inside's been tweaked. Right, move on.
Okay.
I wouldn't say it's possible to tell which cars I'm interested in and which ones I'm not, but the Audi S3, come on. I mean, I don't want it on the PCP. I don't want it on that. It's just a... Nah.
You're not the target market.
I should be the target market. It's one of those ones. I should be the target market.
No, it's got 4 doors. You'd have passengers.
I've got 7 seats right at the minute. It's awful.
I think you drive around on your own.
It's America. Mine's still small.
I know. I'm going to take us to Dacia, and this is the news that they are bringing out a 7-year warranty that can also cover used cars. If you have a Dacia, do click the link in the show notes so you can find out the details on this if you have not been contacted by them already. It's any car that is under 6 years old and has covered fewer than 75,000 miles and has been serviced every year, I presume by Dacia themselves as well, or authorized.
Yeah, it triggers for new cars after a standard 3-year cover ends if an official service is carried out. So maybe, well, I imagine it's going to be similar to Toyota's, whereas it gets triggered if you take it for a proper dealer service. I am more interested in this than I am in the new Audi S3, okay?
But Audi sell a lot of them, or the A3 certainly, so that is an important model for them.
Yeah, well, I've got to sell something these days.
That's good news. We need more car manufacturers to be backing up how good their cars are with lengthy warranties.
Yes, it is, because it's always, you know, ecologically and all that kind of good stuff. It is better to keep the same one maintained forever and to fix bits and pieces than it is to go out and build a new car.
Yep. Okay, it is points of interest time.
Yay!
And I'm going to start with an article from The Autopian, and it's written by Adrian Clark, and it is titled, "Here are the cars that car designers drove to impress other car designers at a fancy car design event." And it's actually... whilst poking a bit of fun and everything, but the car, as ever, check the car park, the cars that turned up, the cars that were driven there, and the cars that were on show were all amazing, and the Mercedes pickup. They're all amazing, what is in this article. So it's almost like a list of the week.
It's almost a list of the week. I like the evil Ford Granada best.
But there is definitely a car in there for everybody. That is for sure.
Yeah. It's one of the places I'd like to go. I've never actually been to Munich. Other than the airport.
Been to Germany.
Other than the airport. Oh, Germany's nice. I like Germany. People are lovely. I just don't want to work there.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, that's a great lunchtime read. Do make sure you get a take 5-10 minutes out of your day to read that on The Autopian. Meanwhile, on Haggerty, though, Anthony Ingram provides our list of the week, and it's titled...
Thank you, Anthony. Thank you.
Oh, yes. I know listicles are unfashionable, but we really quite like a good one.
Yes. You may have noticed that over the last 7.5 years. We do like to promote them if they are worthy.
Yeah, and it's becoming super difficult to find ones that are worthy. Not that, by the way, I feel slightly bad that this week's isn't from Autocar. I'd like to just thank people of Autocar for updating their slide show software.
Yes.
And then, more than that, not just updating it, but then letting me know they'd updated it so that I can stop moaning about it.
Yes, I think that was the main
thing,
wasn't it?
Thank you.
They wanted you to stop bitching.
I really appreciate the fact that someone quite senior from Autocar got in touch to tell me, so thank you very much.
Yes. Thank you.
Anyway, this week's from Haggerty, hopefully one from Autocar next week, is about small stylish coupes from the Redwoody type era. I mean, it basically doesn't exist. It's a car format that doesn't exist anymore.
No.
Unless you want to subject.
No, because I'm sure I saw somebody commenting in the last week about stop calling everything a coupe just because it's got a sloping
bomb.
Rear.
Yeah.
But it's still got four doors. That's not a coupe.
Oh, this one. Oh, this is a kind of tedious. It's a kind of tedious argument these days, to be perfectly honest, because everybody...
Well, I mean, it's been nullified because all car companies do it.
Yeah,
I know. I think it is quite valid.
It is. It's just nobody that's...
You're making a fastback. If it's a four-door...
Yeah, we get it. Sorry. It's just that this has happened so many times online, this argument, and I've heard it too many times there, and I don't need a lecture on a Tuesday morning.
Okay.
And our listeners don't need a lecture whatever time they're listening, because they probably agree with us. And if you don't agree with us, why not tell us in the comments?
Yes. All right, then. So what's your choice?
My choice is the Mazda MX-3.
Okay.
Specifically with the 1.8-litre V6 engine. As long as it comes with a friendly, happy mechanic who likes spending his time grating his knuckles on the front bulkhead, because those engines are amazing up until the point where you need to change the spark plugs or do any maintenance to anything that's on the back of the engine. But I've always liked the MX-3. It is very small, very pretty, and a super smooth little V6 engine. Mm-hmm. If you need more seats, you can buy the accompanying 323F/Atlantis model. There are a few here. I think there's enough for you to choose one as well, Andrew.
I'm going to go for the Renault Megane Coupe. I spent 2 weeks with a hire car version of one of these, and I found it a delight to be with, and I think it's a very pretty car as well. Some of the colours do it more justice than others, but it was just great fun to drive around.
Cool.
And there was certain roads that I went on with it that I knew very well, so I could enjoy those roads, shall we say. But I was not expecting that when I got the keys. I was all like, oh dear, okay, it's pretty, but it was great fun.
There's a bunch of cars here that I would very happily own and drive every day. Loads of nice cars. I mean, and we've not even chosen the obvious ones.
No.
I think by most people's standards.
There are many that body kits as special editions were added to.
Yeah, but there's...
or race series.
There's nice ones. Yeah, race series too, yeah. Yeah. Good stuff. That takes us, Mr. Clues, to the ad finally this week. Do you want to talk about it?
And finally, we have a short video for you. It really is short. It's less than a minute. But it demonstrates, because I've never understood how these worked, and I just stumbled across this because somebody else was sharing it on Mastodon, actually. And I'm sorry, I cannot remember who it was. Otherwise, I would certainly give credit. But showing how Mercedes SLS doors with the explosive bolts worked if you rolled over your SLS, because obviously, gullwing, they weren't probably strong enough to lift the car up as you opened them by hand if you were on your roof, having just had a moment, shall we say. So this video shows how they work and how you can extricate yourself from said wrong way up vehicle. I love seeing engineering solutions like this.
Have you ever
been
in an SLS?
No.
Amazing. Until you get out, stand up, and crack your head off the bottom of the door.
Oh.
Yeah. But really, really cool. They sound amazing.
Mm.
Brunting Thorpe, we got a few years ago. Really good. Yes. 'Twas excellent stuff. Brilliant. I think that's us for this week. Any parish notes? Just a reminder for Google podcast listeners or Android users to give us a shout with what they use.
Please.
Please. That would be awesome.
You're not just helping us. You're helping everybody at that point. That's how good you are. You're helping everyone.
You deserve a great big cuddle from Andrew.
More than a promise.
Anyway, on which note, let's move on, I think. And it's time, if that hasn't appalled you enough, to remind you that between now and next week, you can give us any feedback and share your thoughts for the show at Motoring Podcast on Twitter and Instagram, on Facebook, and on the contact page at motoringpodcast.com, the hub of all our activities. Remember, you can support us financially via Patreon, and please leave a review and rating on Apple Podcasts or however your podcast app lets you do such a thing. Andrew, what's the best way to get in touch with you?
Best way to get in touch with me is to search for Crack Windscreen on Twitter or Mastodon, where you'll find me. I'm also on LinkedIn as well, under my actual real name. Alan, if people want to get in touch with you personally, what's the best way for them to do that?
For me, it's probably best to use either Twitter or Blue Sky, where I'm at AJP Bradley, B-R-A-D-L-E-Y. We'll be back, as we said, very soon. But until then, I've been Alan Bradley.
I've been Andrew Clues.
And safe motoring.